Yesterday we discussed the characteristics of conditioned souls that do you remember anything from yesterday, any of these characteristics, these qualities of a conditioned soul? Whatever you remember. What do you remember? Forgetfulness of Krishna. That's a symptom, primary symptom of a conditioned soul. Yeah. What do you remember?
Second, how the conditioned soul is always trying to satisfy that by sense gratification.
Yeah. Everything is mine. And trying to get temporary satisfaction for the senses, yeah. That thing there was one more. Please? Fruitive activities, yeah. Let's see. That, yeah, this one we have forgotten. And that is, yeah, uncontrolled mind and senses. That, So, does someone from you have these problems? Yeah? Yeah? You have that problem also? Yeah. Okay. Then today we will discuss, try to find out how it would feel to be liberated. That. So I went to the Bhagavatarka Marichimala. Bhagavatarka Marichimala means, yeah, mala means garlands. That's it's a garland of verses. That and yeah. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in that book has 20 chapters, 20 garlands of verses, and these are important verses from the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, Bhaktivinoda Thakur would not identify them as special. And some, I went through the chapters which deals with the qualities of a liberated soul, and I came up with three, I divided them in three categories. And the first verses are about realizing one's spiritual svarupa. That this is from the 11th canto, from the Uddhav Gita. That first verse 11:12-17. Although the sky or space is the resting place of everything, the sky does not mix with anything, nor is entangled. So what is first explaining? The soul is different from the body. It does not mix with the body. It does not become entangled in the body. You are contaminated consciousness. We think we are entangled, but it's not possible, because how can something spiritual become entangled in something material? It's just not possible. But so we have to realize that, like, the sky is the resting place of everything. The sky does not mix with anything, nor is entangled. Similarly, the sun is not at all attached to the water in which it is reflected, with innumerable reservoirs, and a mighty wind blowing everywhere is not affected by the innumerable aromas and atmospheres through which it passes. In the same way, a self-realized soul is completely detached from the material body and the material world around it is like a person who has awakened and arisen from a dream. That's interesting, that comparison with a dream. We dream at night and then we wake up. What do we think of the dream? Do we take it very serious? No, we think it's just a dream. That's the same way for the spirit soul. The experience, we experience the life of the gross body that begins by birth and ends by death. And that, for one who is self-realized, that is like a dream. A dream that begins with taking birth and a dream that ends with death. It's a bad dream. That's what we are going through. You think?
60, 70, 80 years.
That I'm 58 and yesterday I was like 2 years old. It's so going so quick. You think it's going slow? Death is approaching very quickly. Yes.
Prabhupada said when a soul becomes liberated, just like when you dream, you might think it's long, but when you wake up, you realize it was very short. So Prabhupada said when someone goes back to the spiritual world, even if he stayed in millions of universes, so many, it will seem like one minute.
Yeah, the experience of time. But I tell you that, 50 years ago, I was 8 years old. I've been born in a little village near to Brussels. In that village, everyone spoke Flemish, old Flemish language. Well, the Flemish culture, a Catholic church, only one church, that everyone knew everyone. And that all the old people that were living there at that time, and also those not so old, they all died after 50 years. By going back, nobody knows me anymore. All the houses changed. They don't speak Flemish anymore there. That Flemish language died out because their children were educated in Dutch, which is not really the same language. So my language disappeared. All the people that I knew disappeared. All the buildings disappeared. Everyone speaks French now there. That the influence of the big city came. So if I think, today I am just thinking, did it really happen? It's all gone. So even in this life, I was wondering, was it a dream? Well, it's not existing anymore. That's the influence of time. But we think it all very important now. Yeah. This is interesting. A dream. That in the dream we become so attached to things. But it's all illusion. It's all gone very quickly. Like time. That. So for the spirit soul, this life of the body is a dream. That, and a self-realized soul, it becomes awakened from it. It wakes up spiritually. And waking up means, oh, what's the use of trying to become something in this world? What's the use of getting possessions and wealth? All temporary things. Soon you leave the body, it's all gone. All Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if one life lives for the satisfaction of the senses, one lives in vain for nothing. But maybe we don't believe Krishna, but Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, maybe it's not so important for us. But, but it's a reality. That, so it says, with expert vision sharpened by detachment, the self-realized soul cuts all doubts to pieces through knowledge of the self and completely withdraws his consciousness from the expansion of material variety. So that's the making of spiritual advancement. This is first in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Napasrityat priyam papyan uvichat papya sabriyam stirbadum asam udo brahmavid brahmanistitaha. When we situated in Brahman, when we situated in real intelligence, is one is not interested in enjoying anything in this world. If enjoyment comes, no interest. That and when suffering comes, that just tolerate. That's the person with intelligence that knows I've nothing to gain in this world, nothing to become. That if trying to become something in this world, I should realize who I am, different from this body. That. A few more verses here. A person is considered to be completely liberated from the gross and subtle material body, but when all the functions of his vital energy, senses, mind, and intelligence are performed without material desire. That's interesting. Without material desire. That, some people think Krishna consciousness means acting without desires. A complete misconception. We cannot be without desires. That's activity of the soul being attached, desiring. But what do we desire? Do we desire things in this world? And try to enjoyment to give enjoyment to the body, which is just like a dream. That's the material desire. Our real desires, this desire of the spirit soul, is to connect with Krishna. That's called yoga. And what is this about? What do we all want in this world? What everyone deep in one's heart wants is to love and to be loved. That's what we want. That, but that platform of love we find in the practice of devotional service. That's devotional service means acting out of love for Krishna. And that's the activity of the spirit soul. And that means spiritual desire, wanting to please Krishna. That's, if not, we become entangled. Such a person also, but a person who acts for the pleasure of Krishna, such a person, although situated within the body, is not entangled. Sometimes, for no apparent reason, one's body is attacked by cruel people or violent animals. At other times and in other places, one will surely be offered great respect or worship. One will become neither angry when attacked nor satisfied when worshipped, is actually intelligent. That verse that I quoted from Bhagavad Gita, Naprasrityat Priyam Papyono Vichat Papya Sabriyam Stir Buddhir Asamudu Brahmavit Brahmani Istita. That's intelligence. That this happiness and distress, that's part of the dream. Do we take the dream very serious? You go to the cinema hall and a film is projected on a big screen. But what is projected on a big screen? Some lights, that's all. But we start to identify with the screen and with the personages, with the personalities in the film. And then sometimes we feel happy, sometimes we feel distressed. So that's the point. If we identify with this happiness and distress of the body, then it becomes like a real experience. During the Bhaktivedanta course, we came at the 11th canto at a certain verse. And in that verse, Lord Krishna explains what is experience, the happiness and distress in this world. Is it a spirit soul? No. So, what is the element that gets that experience then? What do you think? False ego, mind, soul. We are divided. You want to know what Krishna says in the Uddhava Gita? You think his opinion is important? Yeah. He says that the experience of pain and pleasures in this world is an experience of the false ego. It's the material element that makes the soul identifying with the body. Of course, that experience is also experienced through the medium of the mind, but it's a false ego. Identifying with the film on the screen, and we take it very serious. So waking up means not identifying with the film anymore. Around 1992, I was in Radhadesh and Satchinanda Maharaj came and he gave a seminar. And he said, in the evening, you take a piece of paper and you write on that paper, today I will see myself as the observer. And you put that above your bed. The next day, you get up, you look at that paper, and you try to do that the whole day. If you are successful in it, you are perfectly Krishna conscious. that seeing oneself as the observer of everything that's done by material nature. And the spirit soul has the choice of options. Identifying or not. This in 270 of Bhagavad Gita is mentioned that as rivers are flowing to the ocean is not disturbed by the rivers flowing into it. In the same way, a self-realized person, desires pop up into the mind, but it does not identify with these desires. And by that, they go away. The mind is like a film, and these desires pop up. Where do these desires come from? These are all unfulfilled desires from previous lives. They are in our subconsciousness. And what's the characteristic of a material desire? Duspranana lenacha. You cannot fulfill it. It remains always unfulfilled. You never get what is expected. You get frustrated. So and we have so many desires from previous lives. And Krishna brings them in our mind and says, here, you can try again. And with the conditioned soul thinks, I am the mind. So that's my desire, yes. Let's go for it. And this time it will work. But it never works. But one who is self-realized sees that desire popping up in the mind and immediately thinks, oh, Krishna says, yei samsvasya bhoga dukayonra evate. If I want to fulfill that material desire and enjoy, the result will be suffering. So why should I do it? And the self-realized soul forgets about it, and it disappears. But when you catch the desire, you are finished, you identify with it. That's false ego. Therefore, a sage sees with equal vision and therefore is not affected by that which is materially good or bad. Good or bad is for the body. Mostly we get more bad for the body than good. But anyway, when we are young, we are in illusion. But wait a few years when you get older. Someone asked my father when he was nearly 60, he said, how are you? Because in England you must say I'm fine, or you can say not so good, but he said that I'm fine, but I have many diseases, but nothing is serious enough to die from. Now I'm practically of the same age, I start to understand what he meant. Indeed, although he observes others performing good and bad work, speaking properly and improperly, The sage does not praise or criticize anyone. So-called big people in this world, politicians, leaders, and so on. But what can they do for us? They think they are the body. So what can they do for us? Nothing. That they get the same result of all of us. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, your body changes to Arjuna. It will grow old and then you die. Is there someone here who thinks that sectarian knowledge that's only for the Hindus? It's fanatic, yeah. Well, Krishna says one would take birth as to die. Only Hindus die? Or? No? This is science, what Krishna gives us. One who has realized his situation, he knows all the so-called big men are in the same position, nothing different. You may be rich, you may have everything in the world and by being successful, but the end is a failure, that's all. That intelligence means I'm going to die. Why am I in that situation? Or how can I get out of it? That's intelligence. And if we realize our real position, then we become free from suffering. Srila Prabhupada, when he was his last visit at the Bhaktivedanta Manor, August, September 77, that he came to London, but then his body became very sick and he had to stay in bed. He was staying in bed already 2 days. And a devotee asked Prabhupada, are you suffering? Interesting question. Srila Prabhupada said, I don't feel anything. That's interesting. The more we identify with the body, the more we suffer. I remember when I was 5 years old, I had a lot of toothache. Of course, my parents never showed me that I should brush my teeth. That was not in their culture yet. So from a young age, my teeth were rotting in my mouth. Had a lot of toothache. Of course, I like to eat so much chocolate, but could I do that? But then another friend came, playing with me, and we started to engage in play. And during the play, no toothache, nothing. So absorbed in the play. But then after the play, the friend went away, and the toothache came back. What does that mean? It's just a material example, but the more we identify with the body, the more we suffer. For the purpose of maintaining his body, a liberated sage should not act, speak, or contemplate in terms of material good or bad. So no speaking, no, in terms of good or bad. That's material consciousness. We think that's good and this is bad. We think that's auspicious, that's inauspicious. the purport of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada writes, ultimately, the whole material atmosphere is inauspicious. Because even if you perform so-called good deeds, you have to take birth to get reactions. It's all inauspicious. That Radha should be detached in all material circumstances and take pleasure in self-realization. He should wander about, engaged in this liberated life style, appearing like a retarded person to outsiders, not caring for honor or dishonor. That's interesting. Because attachment to things in this world makes us suffer. We are attached to our relatives. But what with the relatives in your previous life? With your father, a mother, your sisters, are you still caring for them? Please, tell me, do you still care for them? But now in this body you take it very serious, these relationships. You become so attached. That's called insanity in the highest degree. That's what it is.
Insanity.
Insane. Insanity. Yeah. Madness. That's what it is. But it's difficult to come out of it. Out of this madness. It was not that Arjun, when Abhimanyu died, that he didn't care. He was quite affected. But only one day, then he was finished. He made his vow to kill, what's the name? The one who killed Abhimanyu. Jayadratha, that was it. He made a vow to kill Jayadratha. Anyway, that's a whole other story. Interesting. But Srila Prabhupada was not affected by good and bad. When I heard the story from Indian Swami, but anyway, Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Mayapur, at a certain time, we had security guards already in that time. Srila Prabhupada's quarters were just built, and the security guard had to be before the door of Srila Prabhupada's quarters at a certain time. When Srila Prabhupada arrived at that time, he said, the guard is not here. And he asked the devotee to get him. And then the guard came into the room from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada became very angry and started to shout at him in Bengali. The devotee who was just near to Prabhupada was shivering from fear. So heavy that was Srila Prabhupada chastising him. But then when the guard went out, Srila Prabhupada became immediately very peaceful, as nothing ever happened. He was not affected by it. Just a drama. The same happened in Amsterdam, in the installation of Jagannath Baladev Subhadram. Because devotees did not make the required preparations for the installation. The organization was just very floppy. And Srila Prabhupada was chastising the devotees very angrily. And there was the Dutch TV filming everything. I didn't care. He was so angry. But then after that, the installation was done. Srila Prabhupada was sitting in a rocking chair, very peaceful. Like nothing happened ever. Of course, you know, Srila Prabhupada was translating and commenting on the Bhagavatam on his deathbed in Vrindavan. Who can do that? You must not be too much disturbed. Hari Saripabhu told that Srila Prabhupada lost a thief, and yet the thief is in his hand, and Srila Prabhupada started laughing. But anyway, that's just, yes, a person who wakes up from the dream is intelligent and is not interested in the decorations of the body, in accumulation for wealth, honor, and so on. No? So, then I have another series of verses. I put the title, Aloof from Bodily Activities and Attachment. One who is enlightened in self-realization, although living within the material body, sees himself as transcendental to the body. Just as one has arisen from a dream, gives up identification with the dream body. A foolish person, however, although not identical with his material body, but transcendental to it, thinks himself to be situated in the body, just as one who is dreaming sees himself as situated in an imaginary body. Yeah, that's the same thing. Everything is very temporary. The situation we are now in will not be the situation within 20, 30 years. Maybe we are not there anymore. That material situation always change. Doesn't make any sense. But now, what do the self-realized liberated persons, what do? That they don't sit down the whole day that's thinking that I'm not a body. No. They are engaging in spiritual activities. And that's pure devotees always drink the nectarian topics of Krishna. That is 2.237 from the Bhagavatam. Those who drink through oral reception, fully filled with the nectarian message of Lord Krishna, the beloved of the devotees, purify the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment, and thus go back to Godhead, to the lotus feet of Him. So that's, they always speak about Krishna. Machita machata prana bodhe antas prasparam kate antas samam nityam tushanti sharamantish. They always hear and converse about Krishna. And they relish that, and by that they become purified from this false identification. They wake up from this dream. That it is said, if one studies the Srimad Bhagavatam verse by verse in association of advanced devotees and verse by verse studied it. Then when one comes to the ninth canto and the end of the ninth canto, and one has realized the purports of all these verses, one is liberated. We started in Vrindavan, at the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education in the year 2000. With 50 students, we started to study the Bhagavatam. And every year, 3 months, we were in Vrindavan for 10 years. But out of these 50, only 5 made it till the end. 5. By Krishna's mercy, I'm one of these 5 who survived it to the end. The other Vrindavan, Adi Purush, was there. Dayananda Maharaj, he was my roommate for many years. And some Mataji from Russia, and a devotee from South India. We were 5. And it was such a life-changing experience. Each 5 of us, what are we doing? We are all traveling preachers of the Bhagavatam. That's what we do. But the experience was a life-changing experience, hearing the Bhagavatam from Bhurijan Prabhu, Mother Narayani, so many other senior devotees. So that's why we should hear regularly the Bhagavatam, when after studying the first 10 cantos, yes, you have undergone a change of heart. In Bhagavad Gita, the first qualities of the divine mentioned in chapter 16, Abhayam Sattva Samsudhir. Abhayam means fearless. When we realize I'm not a body, it becomes fearless. Sattva Samsudhir means purification of one's existence. That's what we have to work on. In transcendental realization, you have two stages, divided in sub-stages, but the first stage is the stage of purification. And when the heart is pure, the next stage is development of love of Godhead. These two stages are there. And the first 10 cantos is the purification. And then you hear about Krishna. When you are pure, in a purified state, you develop love of Godhead. In the same way, Haridas Thakur says the same about the chanting of Krishna's holy names. First, you must come to the Namabhas chanting, reflection of the holy name. And if one chants that and gets that reflection, by as a result, the heart becomes purified. And this Namabhas is attained when we give up Namapparat, offenses, offensive mentalities. The 10 offenses are mostly about disrespecting the spiritual master, disrespecting the devotees, disrespecting the Vedic literature, disrespecting the holy name, or trying to abuse it. So that's, we have to become purified from that. Come to the real motive. Pleasing Krishna out of love. That, and when by the chanting the heart is purified, then we chant, we can chant the Sudanam, the Haridas Thakur said. And by the chanting of this Sudanam, we develop love for Krishna. That, that, yes? Yes. All these symptoms are explained in a book, Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's all explained there. But the in the introduction already, it's mentioned that pure devotional service has six qualities. Klesagni Subhadra, in the beginning stages even, it relieves one from all suffering, and everything in your life becomes auspicious. That, and there are four more qualities. That as one progresses in the higher stages, that, yes, one becomes very much attracted to Krishna. And finally, due to one's love, one will control Krishna. That's interesting. But all these symptoms, because you have stages in the development of love of Godhead. After the Sudanam, that's called Nishta, liberation. But then the next stage is Asakti. One becomes very much attracted to hearing about Krishna, that asakti, well, ruchi is attraction, and asakti is the realization of Krishna in the heart. One gets darshan of Krishna in the heart directly. And then one comes to the stage of bhava, which is the preliminary stage of love of Godhead. And there are 10 symptoms explained in chapter 17 of the Nectar of Devotion. Symptoms. That's like one does not lose a moment not engaging in devotional service. One becomes very attracted to the chanting of the holy name. There's so many symptoms are there. So that's in detail described. I cannot answer that just in two words. It's a whole book with the symptoms that are described. Please. Yeah.
So this is the state of
formal
realization?
This is the stage of?
State of super
realization. It's not really. Because it's not really super soul realization. This realization is also described in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto. Mm. 3.9.11 from Bhakti Yoga Parviva Vitarit Saroja Asesu Texatya Pato Nanuna Tapumsam Yayatirata Urhaya Vibhavayanti Tatat Vapu Pranayase Satanurhaya. O my Lord, your devotees can see you through the ears by the bona fide process of hearing, and thus their heart become cleansed, and you take your seat there. You are so merciful to your devotees that you manifest yourself in the particular eternal form of transcendence in which they always think of you. The super, this is not the super soul. The super soul is a forearm, Narayan. This Krishna takes the form in which the devotee becomes attracted to. It's called Ishtadev. So in that, Ashakti Srila Prabhupada said, is repairing our transcendental television in the heart. Television is broken now. It has to be repaired. And then we feel Krishna's presence every moment. Krishna speaks to us directly. Anyway. Yes, Prabhu.
I have a different question about something you spoke before. It's about the purification of material desires in the process of devotional service.
Yeah.
There's different examples in the Bhagavatam, and they turned out in different ways. One example is Dhruva Maharaj. He had material desires, and then he executed devotional service.
Right.
And then he felt purified of that desire. He said, I was looking for broken glass and I found it.
Yeah.
He became purified. But then Kadama Muni meditated for 10,000 years on Vishnu, so much so that Vishnu appeared to him. But he also admitted he was feeling lonely to have his material desires, to have a wife. He was not ready to not have it. So he went, suddenly it seemed that he pursued his material desire and he had many. So the reason why I'm asking this is one person, and they were both of them, they were greatly in the ocean service. One became detached, the other one didn't become detached right away. So for my personal question is, I do not want to be like that. I want to perform devotional service, which will purify me, which will not produce another life where I will have a chance to fulfill my very deep-rooted material desires, because I'm not being washed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to execute devotional service in this life in such a way that these desires are completely gone. So, what is your understanding?
Yeah, the first, the Kardamma Muni, there are different opinions from our acharyas, as I remembered, is when we discussed it in the Bhaktivaibhava course in Vrindavan, that Kardama Muni, his role was to show the Vedic process and not deviate from it. Because he got super soul realization, yes, but then the Lord Kapila Dev, the Supreme Lord himself, appeared as his son. And he decided to leave. Finally, he got the Supreme Lord. His son, he got darshan, and he said, I'm leaving. But this explained by our acharyas, he did that because he had realized the same Lord in his heart. He was not really separating in that way. And secondly, he was following the Vedic process to show that one must take vanaprastha at a certain time, that's a Vedic way. That I'm not saying that we have to follow all Kardama Muni. That's not what I'm saying, but that's one thing there. But if you asked what I think after going to the whole Bhagavatam and to the that It's true that devotees who are sincere, they don't desire to take another birth. We don't want it. But pure devotional service means surrender unto the Supreme Lord. And that means whatever you want, Krishna. You want me to take birth again? Fine. That I'm just surrendering unto you. Whatever you want. So a devotee does not want liberation. He just wants to serve Krishna. And if we come to that platform, then that's Krishna will arrange us either to go back to the spiritual world or to engage us in his pastimes somewhere in the material world. But Krishna will take care of us. So that's the principle of pure devotional service, not even wanting liberation. It requires a serious level of purity. So I'm not speaking out of realization here, but that's my understanding. Does that help you think that?
Yeah. So we should not desire to be liberated, serving the Lord. Another question is related in the same line. Like Arjuna, who is a personal associate of Krishna, but at the same time he had four wives, and one of them was Krishna's sister, Subhadra, and he fell in love with Subhadra. Seemingly, he fell in love with Subhadra, and he. Krishna helped us, so one would maybe, well, isn't he not supposed to be acting on behalf of Krishna, because he's Krishna's associate, but isn't he anybody else? But then Krishna didn't care and help him. So it seems, if we take away the idea that it's a pastime, without being a pastime, it becomes
bewildering. Well, I'm thinking of Bhishma Dev instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj that because Yudhisthira Maharaj could not accept, even not from Krishna, that fighting the whole Kurukshetra war was a good thing, because he was thinking, if they fought just to bring me on the throne, I will be responsible for all these millions of deaths. He was feeling like that. And then Bhishma Dev instructed him and said, this is all the plan of Krishna. Krishna is directing the whole lila. That's because while you were speaking, I was thinking also that in Dvaraka, Krishna was, Arjuna made a vow to defend a Brahman's son. Already 9 sons has taken birth, and then they died immediately after, and then. Arjuna made this vow, it will not happen again. I will be there with my bow, and even that personified will not take away this son. But then, what did Arjuna do? To become empowered, he did not worship Krishna, but Lord Shiva. And then finally everything went wrong. and he was going to commit suicide under the fire because he failed in his mission. And then Krishna brought him to Mahavishnu. That's because, so it was clearly Krishna's plan or Mahavishnu's plan. that so this that's Arjuna's service to Krishna, to organize his pastimes to teach us, and therefore he travels from universe to universe. And in every universe there is a battle and a kind of Kurukshetra war, and Krishna brings Arjuna to Yoga Maya, bewilders him so that he can ask the right questions so that he can speak Bhagavad Gita. It's an interesting relationship, Krishna and Arjuna. That's, yeah. But Krishna also does use us in his service. That if I, the Sangyatam movement is also, in some sense, Krishna's lila. It's Lord Chaitanya's expansion of his lila. And, yeah. And Prabhupada guides us in that lila. That, so even in this life, yeah, we can be engaged in that, these pastimes. That, yeah, good. These were characteristics of liberated souls. And now, tomorrow evening, if we have still time, we can discuss how to go from the conditioned state to the liberated stage, and what to do and what not to do to get there, according to these verses of Bhagavatarka Marichimala. I'm looking forward to discuss that with you tomorrow. Good. Thank you very much. Shantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.